You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
As always on a Tuesday, I speak to independent financial advisor Joanne Bainham, formerly of Might on Optimal. Joanne, I was just saying to someone this morning, it's like Groundhog Day. I wake up in the morning quite early, as I usually do, see the S&P and the NASDAQ futures. They're both at record highs. And I think, am I missing something here? It just keeps on going on and on. And yet more and more people die and more worrisome issues come to the fore, and yet up the market goes. But I suppose we're used to that. I mean, actually, we've been used to this not just for the last 6, 7, 8 months, but for the last 6, 7, 8 years.
Look, we're living in liquidity markets. That's why we're seeing this. Fundamentals matter far less than just money printing. There's a great chart from a company called Cross Border Capital. And if you're on Twitter, I highly recommend you follow them. And they show the markets debased in dollars, which is just say, you know, relative to money liquidity. And markets are not expensive on that measure. In fact, markets could go a lot higher. We're nowhere near the 2000 levels or the 2006 levels from a liquidity measurement perspective. So that's why we continue to see markets going up, because where else do you put your money? I mean, just to give you some context on that. So back to your comment about, you know, the economies aren't in great shape. Dividends. Okay, so in the old days, you'd rely on dividends when you bought equities because that made up a huge portion of your return. For this, I think it's the first half of 2020, we're going to see dividend payout ratios or dividends payouts fall between 17 to 23%, as much as $400 billion. So you're seeing a massive decline in dividend payments because the economy is weak. But this is why liquidity remains plentiful, so people have to buy something else, and they buy the risk assets. So they continue to buy the hope of growth, or the certainty of, sorry, get it wrong, the certainty of growth rather than the hope of growth. And that's exactly why you're seeing money moving into big tech. And just to give you a context of that, Lindsay, just for your comment to Groundhog Day, here's some interesting stats for you. 23% of the S&P now is tech-related. And 37% of the Russell 1000 is tech-related. So tech is definitely dominating the headlines. And again, people are paying up for certainty of growth. So this is the kind of world we're currently living in. But no dividends and certainty of growth.
Yeah, these are companies that will be with us for the rest of our lives. We know that. And some will fall by the wayside. The smaller ones, some smaller ones that are feeding off the bigger ones will fall by the wayside. But I don't think we should really say too much about, it's all about tech and it's not about the real world, because the real world is tech, unfortunately, or fortunately, whether you're in them or not in them. But yes, that is the reality. The question is, how do they develop from here? Have they got a little bit ahead of themselves? Do we change our habits, or do we continue to actually reinforce our habits? This is the next question. I mean, there are so many different things. I was talking again to a commentator this morning. If you look at the price of lumber, for example, I mean, the price of lumber is an all-time record high. The thing keeps on going limit up, and it's not just because of supply constraint. It's also because people are staying at home, and while they're staying at home, not me, of course, because I wouldn't know what to do with a piece of wood, but so some people know what to do with a piece of wood, so they go down to the hardware store and they put up a couple of shelves, or they build a shed in the garden or something. These are the trends that I'm so keen to explore with people very much brainier than myself, and I'm going to do it soon, but you see what I mean? We don't quite know yet
what is going on. You and I spoke last week, but the scarcity of assets argument, whether it be gold or cobalt now, because I see the Chinese are buying enormous amounts of cobalt to do with battery technology, you need cobalt. And lumber is the latest one. Lumber's gone up incredibly high. Mm. That is a combination of two factors. One, it is a scarce asset from the perspective that you can't grow it overnight. Trees don't grow overnight, so it takes time. Mm. So that would be part of the lumber price. But also not only that, though, with interest rates being so low, the housing market's doing very well in the States. And if you recall, a lot of their houses are made in wood. So there is an aspect to that from a housing perspective as well. But I think the theme you're seeing here is hard assets. Assets that aren't plentiful, but they can't be printed overnight, are going up in value. So I do think that's all the very similar theme. Back to your tech question and whether, you know, does it continue going? Some interesting stats I saw. I see Tesco, despite the UK economy struggling, Tesco talking about employing 16,000 new employees, and this is for shelf packers and for people to deliver goods, because online is doing so well for them. So you are seeing COVID has helped a lot of these online companies do very well. So Tesco is just one tiny example in their business from an online perspective. Do I think it's gone too far? Here's a stat for you. On Friday, last Friday, Apple contributed 105% of the total return of the NASDAQ 100 and S&P 500. 105%. I mean, that's just insane. That the breadth of the market gets narrower and narrower by the day. And if you look to something simple like the equal weighted S&P index, it's actually, it was down last week and hasn't gone back to its June 8th high. So we are seeing a market that's becoming narrower and narrower. And traditionally, from a trading perspective, that should make you concerned. I think in the long run, you still want to be in these tech companies. In the short run, though, it is looking very stretched. But, you know, people have lost a lot of money trying to call the top of this. And I'm certainly not going to try and stop, say, when will the top be? But the indicators are implying that it's getting very stretched.
What does the polarization of the market mean? I mean, when I say polarization, I mean the fact that there is such a heavy weighting with such a few very erudite and very nimble companies that have become giants. I don't think the industrial world has ever, or the stock market world, has ever seen such domination. What does it mean for the asset management industry? What does it mean for ETFs? What does it mean for the retail investor, the institutional investor, the pension fund? Because it's just like in South Africa, everyone says, well, you've got to be in Naspers or Prosus or Richemont or whatever it was or whatever it is now. Is it going to make things more difficult or more easy, Joanne?
Oh, gosh, that's such a hard question to answer. I think the reality is if these momentum-driven stocks keep rallying, then your passive indices outperform actives hand over. It's just so much easier for them because an active manager is never going to have such large weighting in these big stocks because it's just not prudent portfolio management. But if you believe the theory that these things are getting too expensive, sometime they're going to fall, and sometimes they will, and at some point there will be an economic rebound in the world because there's so much money printing, so much fiscal spending. At some point we'll see a V-shaped recovery, well, not V-shaped, W-shaped, whatever shape you want to call it. But at some point we'll have some sort of recovery in the world economy. Then these cyclical stocks should do very well. If that happens, active managers should do extremely well. But until that, you know, the money's in passive because an active manager is never going to have those very large weightings. It's the same problem in South Africa. You know, you can be bullish Naspers, but you have to have so much to be bullish. It's very hard to be overweight these stocks. And it's, again, it's not prudent. So in the short term, while you have momentum-driven markets, you know, your passive seems to be the better strategy. In the longer run, one would hope that active managers could outperform because the cyclical companies come to the fore. Mm. But, you know, it's very difficult to call. I think it's easier to say things like Tesla seems very expensive. When you look at its PE ratio, you look at its earnings projections. Again, you would have been completely taken out if you'd been short that stock. So you've got to be very careful of trying to call the top of these things. I think what you can say to yourself is in certain markets where recovery seems stable and you can buy companies on PEs of 6 to 8, it's probably not a bad idea to buy some of those companies. Before you and I spoke now, I've just been interviewing some emerging market fund managers. And it's quite interesting for them. They talk about stocks in South Korea and Taiwan where there is a sort of V-shaped recovery taking place in those economies. And you can buy a number of companies on P's on below 10 P multiples. So maybe that's what you should be doing if you're really worried about where the world is and you want to buy some good value, inverted commas. Maybe it's time to start looking at emerging markets.
Are we missing something? I mean, and then there's two sides to that question. Number one, are we missing something? In other words, this is going to carry on. And in fact, these stocks, despite their current hefty PEs, those PEs will come down because of their earnings increase. Or are we missing something because this is just another fad that will not fizzle out, but certainly temper its enthusiasm? There you are. Two sides to the argument.
Okay, so from a PE perspective, you could see the unwinding of the PE purely because earnings are coming through. That's number point two. But I do think that at some point, economic growth starts to pick up again. And I don't think COVID stays with us forever. So provided governments don't do incredibly stupid things like putting countries back into lockdown, and we have maybe sort of localized lockdowns, not lockdowns of the whole economies, it's hard to believe with this amount of fiscal spending globally that we don't see some sort of recovery in markets in the next year. And if that happens, I'm talking about economic growth from our perspective, you should start seeing a return to the more cyclical industrial stocks. And then it's not so much that tech companies do badly, it's just that other companies do better. Mm. Because I think there's a very strong structural argument for these tech companies, but equally, I think you'd be very careful to look at each company its own merits because some are incredibly expensive at the moment. We saw this in 2000, the tech bubble. I don't think we're in the same position today, but you've got to look at companies on specifics. Tesla is a great example. It could go a lot higher because people seem to have a godlike complex around Elon Musk. But if you look at the fundamentals of that company, it doesn't make a lot of sense. I think there's a problem for you. But, you know, companies like Apple or Google or Facebook still have very good compelling earnings, and their PE ratios are not ridiculous. So you need to look at it from a company-specific perspective. Some of the companies I think are interesting are things like Alibaba in China. Alipay today, which is a subsidiary, I think, of Alibaba, it's going to have an IPO soon, announced, I think, the second quarter of this year, 720 million new users. Hmm. There's still incredible growth in these companies. You know, Facebook, if you compare it to Tencent, I think Tencent's a far better opportunity than Facebook. So if you're looking to Chinese tech, you can buy some interesting companies there without paying the same sort of PE multiples as you are in the US. You've just got to look outside the US markets. It's been a very US-dominated world for the last couple of years. I think it's time to look elsewhere. And I think emerging markets could be quite interesting from that perspective. Just turning to South Africa for a second.
Please.
Gosh, I saw Absa's results came out yesterday. I don't know if you saw them. You might have spoken to someone about it.
I saw the trading update a week before, so I knew more or less what the results were going to be, as everybody else did. And I thought they were not disastrous, but they were certainly alarming.
Well, according to what I've read today, that the EPS numbers were down 82%, and some people were expecting a 50% decline, so that's pretty horrific. But the number that really struck me as being unbelievable is they're expecting credit losses of 14.7 billion rand. Now, you could say their kitchen's sinking the results and they're putting massive bad debts through. That's a massive number. And I don't think we've got any comprehension just how weak the South African economy is. They're talking about the economy contracting this year by 8.2%. I think it might be even worse. We also had Sora Poser with his mea culpa this weekend. I don't know if you spoke to anyone about that. Basically saying, you know, ANC stands as accused number one on corruption. And whilst I don't know if anyone's read the letter, it's 7 pages long and worth reading.
I saw you tweet it and you were actually quite enthused by it, I thought.
I was, and then I felt unbelievably stupid 10 minutes later when individual after individual said, well, you don't actually believe him, do you? Because the ANC are incapable of telling the truth at the moment. And then you look at a few things they've done subsequent to that, insulting Tito for saying that a central bank governor in, I think it's Zambia, is it?
It was the Zambian governor, yes, exactly.
And Tito rightfully came out and said, that's wrong, the independence of the central bank should be sacrosanct, and gets wrapped over the knuckles by the ANC. And you're thinking, well, that's not a good start, ANC, if you want to be seen as credible and standing up against corruption. And then you've got Somalia this morning, I don't know if you saw that, where they've sentenced the Somalian health minister to 18 years in jail for corruption on COVID. And again, you know, ANC talk a very good story, but they've got to start creating action. We need to see people in jail. So I felt like it was a good start. I felt like it was a real mea culpa, and I thought they stood and said, we're taking blame for a lot of these things. But sadly, at the moment, talk is cheap, and I think South Africans want action. So that's the ANC for you at the moment. On a more amusing note, I find this amusing. Mm-hmm. Pravin Gordhan still wants SA Airways to fly. And one of his suggestions I thought was terribly amusing, he wants the trade unions to put money into SA Airways. And I thought, well, that's very interesting.
So lose money for their members, in other words.
Yes. Massively overstaffed. That was why SA Airways got into the problem in the first place, amongst many other problems, no doubt. But now it's the trade unions to put money into it. Now, why would anyone do that? I just don't get it. So I thought that was very amusing.
Yeah, well, I suppose if you've got a sixth sense of humour, yes, it is amusing. But
yes,
SAA SAA has been a ball and chain for the South African government, for the South African taxpayer for what, a decade, 15 years? I don't know. I can't remember anymore because it's another Groundhog Day moment. It just keeps on repeating itself and we keep on falling for it. It's such a lot of, you know what?
No, I completely agree, Lindsay, and I think people are very fed up here, but I don't even think we've got a comprehension yet how weak this economy is going to be. So I think it's getting a lot worse, and those absent numbers for me were pretty chilling. And, you know, unlike in other countries around the world, we don't have the fiscal spending to fix our problems. This is, I'm sure, well documented in lots of your calls with fund managers. Mm. We can't print money like the rest of the world can, and we can't spend our way out of this. So unless the ANC starts making some proper changes, And I think number one on that list is putting corrupt people in jail. The South Africa is still in a lot of trouble. So you can see why then, you know, fund managers and investors keep saying, well, put as much of your money offshore as possible. And that I still think is the right thing to do for your clients.
Okay, let's leave it at that. There's so much to think about. This theme will not just develop over the next couple of years. It'll develop over the next couple of weeks, the next couple of months. It'll change almost on a daily basis. And people are, I don't think we quite realize the structural changes there are in the economy, in the way that we behave, and also in the asset management industry. Joanne, how do we keep in touch with you? How do we follow your work?
Before I say that, I just want to quickly quote something that I saw on Twitter before you and I started talking. And do you remember the story about Marie Antoinette who said, let them eat cake?
Yes.
When the peasants were uprising. Somebody put a tweet now of the Fed Central Bank of the US saying, let them eat stocks.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got a number of people around the world that made an enormous amount of money out of the stock market, but the man in the street has never had it worse. So let them eat stocks. I thought that was quite a statement. Back to your question, Lindsay. People can find me at bainhamjoe@gmail.com as well as madaboutmarkets on Twitter.
Very good. Thanks very much, Joanne. We'll speak again next week. That's Joanne Bainham, independent financial advisor. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.